This hour of the Jason Rancho is brought to you by You Build It. There is a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? National.
It was not a good day for the Democrats who were hoping to get this whistleblower complaint lodged against the president by someone who wasn't even there listening to the phone call at all, because there's no crime even alleged, really, in the whistleblower complaint. There was a lot of what seemed to be opinion in what we read about the whistleblower complaint. And kudos, by the way, to the Saul Spady Show, who decided this morning to read the entire thing on air. There was no crime there. You have secondhand claims that the whistleblower supposedly heard about.
The allegation that is made by the whistleblower is secondhand information, not known to him or her firsthand.
That's Acting Director of National Intelligence Joseph McGuire. He was doing his level best to be as open and honest about what happened during the course of them looking into the whistleblower complaint. They did not immediately release it because it wasn't under their jurisdiction, but he literally gave absolutely every single document. Every single document was delivered to this House committee. They had nothing. They had absolutely nothing. In fact, you can tell they had nothing because instead of actually reading from the transcript, for example, that was released yesterday, Adam Schiff decided, the Democrat, the conspiracy theorist, the one who claimed to have actual evidence of Russian collusion, but he's unwilling to actually put it out there, he didn't even read from the transcript. He read from a script that he created.
This is the essence of what the president communicates.
Okay, this is the essence. Okay, what is it?
We've been very good to your country. Very good. No other country has done as much as we have. But you know what? I don't see much reciprocity here.
Oh, okay. Reciprocity.
I hear what you want. I have a favor I want from you, though. And I'm going to say this only seven times, so you better listen good. I want you to make up dirt on my political opponent. Understand lots of it.
There is not a single word in that document, in that memorandum of the phone call, to suggest that President Trump was asking the Ukrainian president to make up anything. There is not a single word that backs up what Adam Schiff just said.
On this and on that, I'm going to put you in touch with people, and not just any people. I'm going to put you in touch with Attorney General of the United States, my Attorney General, Bill Barr. He's got the whole weight of the American law enforcement behind him. And I'm going to put you in touch with Rudy. You're going to love him. Trust me. You know what I'm asking, and so I'm only going to say this a few more times.
I thought it was seven, but okay.
In a few more ways.
Oh, okay.
And by the way, don't call me again. I'll call you when you've done what I asked.
That is so disturbing in how dishonest it is. Now, he would later call it a parody. But it was not a parody. Parodies have to be funny. What he just said was a disgusting, disturbing lie. And I think he's either delusional and is reading something completely separate but can't actually comprehend it, can't see through the hatred he has for Republicans and this president, or he's just an abject liar, hoping that the media is going to do the dirty work for him. And that's why Dr. Brad Wenstrup, the congressman from Ohio, Republican, called Adam Schiff out.
You know, I think it's a shame that we started off this hearing with fictional remarks, the implication of a conversation that took place between a president and a foreign leader, putting words into it that did not exist. They're not in the transcript. And I will contend that those were intentionally not clear. And the chairman described it as parody. And I don't believe that this is the time or the place for parody when we are trying to seek facts. Nor do those that were involved with the conversation agree with the parody that the chairman gave us. And unfortunately today, many innocent Americans are going to turn on their TV and the media is only going to show that section of what the chairman had to say. But I'm also glad to know that many Americans have seen this movie too many times and they're tired of it.
Shame on any media outlet that lets him get away with that stunt. Shame on any media outlet that plays that Adam Schiff hit job without pointing out that it's a hit job. And this is the exact kind of thing that will help Donald Trump win in 2020. Here's Sarah Sanders on Fox News.
That it's one of the dumbest and most ridiculous political moves that we've seen in history, how they have forced impeachment over this issue. The fact is, I think that this should be looked at as an in-kind contribution to the president's reelection campaign, because all this is doing is helping fuel his campaign. They're raising more money, they're rallying his base, and they're unifying the Republican Party in a way that only they can, by attacking this president the way they do time and time again. It is absurd that they continue to go down this road and haven't learned anything new from it. I think the big loser in all this process has to be Joe Biden. He is coming out and looking terrible, and so far the only inappropriate behavior that I'm seeing in this entire thing is that of Vice President Joe Biden in order to help his son.
Now, to be fair, I think we should say there are allegations. It hasn't been proven with Joe Biden. It sure looks bad. Looks really bad. Bad enough to deserve an actual investigation. But we're probably not going to actually get that, because the Democrats want to do the dirty work and cover this sort of stuff up. Now, at the same time, I thought this was rather interesting. Cabot Phillips over at Campus Reform, friend of the show, he went out to a whole bunch of college students in, I believe it was in D.C. I think he went to George Washington University. And he was asking folks, based on all that we've learned over the course of the last couple days, do you support impeachment? And shockingly, all of the college students he spoke to said, yes, they're all in favor of impeachment. But they can't really say why.
Nancy Pelosi last night, Speaker of the House, announced that they will be moving forward with an impeachment inquiry. Do you agree with her? Do you think President Trump should be impeached?
I think he should be impeached.
He definitely has done enough things to be impeached.
That's a great thing. I mean, I thought she would wait a little bit, but they want to get it done right now, so that's good.
And do you think President Trump should be impeached?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think he should.
And he's put a very bad name for this country, too.
Yeah. So.
But as far as, like, impeachable offenses, like, saying, like, this is a reason that you should be removed from office.
Well, he was elected. Yeah, no, so what's the impeachable offense? He was elected. Yes, he was elected, but what's the impeachable event? No, you're not understanding. He was elected, and I didn't like it. Is that? But that's why you want to impeach him? Yeah.
I'm sure there's reasons that I don't know of, but I've not had, like...
Okay, that's the best answer I think I've ever heard to anything. I'm sure there are reasons that I have this opinion that we should impeach. I'm sure they exist that I don't know of yet. Yeah. I have a position, but I don't know why yet, but I have the position.
Yeah, I totally have an opinion on this, but I don't know what it is, so...
No. He has an opinion. He doesn't know why he has the opinion. He clearly said, yes, impeach. Why? For reasons I don't yet know. Oh, my God.
Seeing one certain reason to, like, impeach him.
Is there anything that comes to mind specifically that you would say that's why he should be impeached?
I don't know if I can say any specific type of event or specific action.
What do you think is an impeachable offense he's committed?
Well, I'm not that into politics. I don't really pay that much attention to it. But I think
you're in favor of impeachment.
Just the fact that he's trying to, like, run immigrants out of the country.
Oh. What would you view as a specific instance of saying this is an impeachable offense?
Honestly, I think it's a lot of just how popular he is.
Wait,
and
what?
So even though you're so popular and popping right now, it's not good for America. That's what I believe.
I would say because you're, like, literally tearing apart families. You know, like, all, like, the little immigrant children that are in, like, the little, like, camps and stuff while, like, their parents are, you know, they don't know where, like, their kids are. They're freaking out. Like, he's literally destroying families.
I mean, that's the closest to a talking point that was regurgitated in that video. So I guess kudos for remembering that. You know, you're memorizing a whole bunch of stuff in your chemistry class, your math class, your history class, your computer programming class. You got to also be able to remember the talking points put out by the Democratic Party. So kudos to her. This is America's future, by the way. Right there. 1-800-465-8770. Send me a text message on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. You can follow us on Facebook. We are so close to hitting 10,000 Facebook fans. Very close. So if you haven't yet done so, please text the keyword Facebook to 1-800-465-8770 or head on over to facebook.com/Jason Rantz Show to give me a follow. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
Local ICE agents are calling attention to the sanctuary city and county and state policies that we have here in Washington State. Joining me in studio to talk about today's press conference at the ICE field director's office in Seattle is Aaron Granillo. He is a reporter with our sister station, Cairo Radio. What prompted today's press conference?
Yeah, so today started with the acting ICE director at the White House giving a briefing, talking, well, really blasting sanctuary policies across the country, including here in Washington, saying that it is not protecting communities, saying that it's actually harming communities. And then later on today, we heard from our field director here in Seattle, Natalie Asher, and she echoed those comments and said she's essentially fed up with her agency being not allowed to cooperate with local law enforcement agencies when they try to detain illegal immigrants.
Enough is enough. While there are varied opinions on what immigration law in this country should be, current law must be adhered to and enforced. And ICE's focus on arresting illegal aliens with criminal convictions and pending charges should not be even remotely controversial.
And see, that's a key part of distinction between arguments coming from the right and arguments coming from the left. Because progressives want to pretend that these ICE agents are literally knocking on doors and asking for proof of citizenship, otherwise we're going to arrest and then deport you. What she's talking about here and what we're really talking about in the vast majority of the cases are illegal immigrants who have committed, in lots of cases, serious crimes, and they want to be able to deport those folks. And that does not seem controversial at all to me.
She went on to give a few examples of instances where ICE tried to cooperate with local law enforcement and claims that she was not allowed to work with the jails. Cases where people may have committed rapes or assaults. They requested detainers, which many of the critics will tell you are voluntary. And that's why the jails, according to the supporters here, will say don't cooporate,
which is nonsense
because they're voluntary.
Yes, I suppose they're voluntary, but there is state law and sanctuary policies that say you cannot voluntarily cooperate with ICE.
Correct. Yes.
When they say that it's voluntary, that's kind of that's a disingenuous argument. That
the detainer technically.
Yeah. But let's be clear. I mean, they're saying that because they want to pretend that their policies are somehow not responsible for letting go a guy who raped a woman in a wheelchair in White Center.
Here's another case that Natalie Asher brought up, specifically a guy who was let free that ICE tried to get its hands on.
Alejandro Maldonado Hernandez was arrested by the Washington County Sheriff's Office for the offenses of manslaughter second degree, assault third degree, and reckless driving. ICE lodged a detainer with the Washington County Jail. Ignoring the ICE detainer, the Washington County Jail later chose instead to release Maldonado into the community, where he remains at large, a fugitive criminal alien.
So I talked to State Senator Wellman, Lisa Wellman, yeah, who was behind some of these sanctuary policies.
She Mercer Island?
Yes, correct. Yeah. Mercer Island Democrat.
Shocker!
And she claims that this was not the intent of the law. And she actually just released a statement just essentially saying that the federal government's immigration responsibilities, and I'm quoting here, should not fall on the shoulders of our local law enforcement and state agencies. So this is the argument.
She's right. And it doesn't. That's not what this is about. Because again, Lisa Wellman wants you to pretend that this is all about ICE saying, I want you guys to go door to door, get people's information, and then turn them in. That's not what this is about. This is when ICE is aware of someone who is in this country illegally, gets hit for some kind of crime that's serious, like an assault, a rape, a murder, and they simply say, can you hang on to them? Because we need to be able to get our agents there to then transport that person to the detention center here in Tacoma, wherever they end up sending them, sure, for the possibility of or likelihood of deportation. This is not, Lisa Wellman is not being honest. And that's why she won't do any interviews with anyone who might call her out on it.
She her bill, she also says, though, by the way, is it's part of the larger picture to protect the whole immigrant community as a whole. So, I mean, you know,
yeah, because she's pretending that, again, that something that's not happening is actually happening. But is there any evidence to suggest here in Washington State at any point ICE was literally just knocking on doors and saying, are you here? You look Hispanic, so let's just double check. That's not happening.
That is not happening here. Interesting, though, you bring this up, though, because today ICE says that these policies actually, they make the argument that it makes immigrant communities less safe, actually, because whereas they could just go into the jails and target people that they have detainers for, then they claim they have to go into immigrant communities and look for them.
Totally.
And then perhaps knock on a door. And then perhaps there are other people who are in that house who are also
who might get freaked out and spooked. And I totally get that. But here's the difference. So I make a very clear distinction, as do reasonable people, with someone who's simply in this country illegally and they're here because they want a better life. They're here because they had a lack of opportunities in their home country. There's maybe violence there. They came here for a better life. I separate them from the person who's in this country illegally and committing acts of violence against folks. The left, in this case, is not, because they want to treat everybody the same. I don't. I want to treat the bad guys as legitimate bad guys.
I did ask the state senator straight up, should people who are in this country illegally and commit violent crimes, should they be allowed to stay here? She said no. She said they should not be allowed to stay here. But she said that's up to the federal government to do it, state jails.
Did she take a 37-second breath between answering that question like Gail Tarleton did when I asked her that same question and she wasn't so cut and dry with her answer?
No, she had a little bit of a, you know, wraparound way to get to it, but in the end she said no. People who are in this country and if they commit serious crimes, yeah, they should be.
But we should not tell when we know that someone's in this country illegally and committed a crime. We should not tell federal authorities that they committed that crime and are here illegally.
In their eyes,
crazy.
In their eyes, it would be for the greater good. The greater migrant community at large.
You know what they're full of? Don't answer that question. You're the reporter. I get to answer that question, but people at home know what I'm saying. MyNorthwest.com has got the report from Aaron Granillo from our sister station, Kyle Radio. Aaron, thank you so much for stopping by. I appreciate it.
Happy to do it.
Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? You can't make this up.
So I love this story, and I'm glad we can't make it up because it actually means it's legitimate. So yesterday, big event for Amazon, announcing a whole host of new products that they're making themselves because they're starting to do more of their standalone products. And it's actually brilliant of them because what does Amazon know? They know what sells and they know who buys it and they know how much they're willing to spend on it. And they can go through all of the comments that are left on reviews of the products that they're selling. So then they can actually use all of that data that's free to them to then create better products that they know are going to sell. And then they'll put them higher up on the list when you're searching for certain products. And so they've got Echo Buds coming out, which is like their version of the Apple AirPods. So it's the standalone wireless headphones. They've got an Echo Loop, which is a ring that features two microphones and a tap-on button, which allows owners to record messages and send them to an Echo smart speaker. They've got Fetch, which is a pet tracking device attached to a dog collar. But this is what I'm so excited about. Oh my God. For 99 cents, you can have Samuel L. Jackson and some other celebrities be the voice on your Amazon Echo.
That tops every other product that you just named.
Oh my God, this is the best thing. But perhaps the best part of it is they give you the option of having Samuel L. Jackson drop F-bombs.
I love that.
You can have it the clean version. So he'll just say, "Get up, Jason," as an alarm. Or the unclean version, which we can't even attempt to say. I would pay more than 99 cents for this.
This would be great.
They don't say who the other celebrities are.
None. It doesn't matter. I don't care.
You're just all in. I'm all in, too. I love the idea. I'm going with this.
What other celebrity do you want?
I mean, I don't know. That's a good question.
Give me Mike Myers, but in his Shrek voice.
So have Shrek do it?
Yeah.
That would get annoying. There is just something about Samuel L. Jackson cursing at you to get up as an alarm that I think would actually motivate you. You can give it a little bit of an alarm. Just say, I can't say the name of the device because then it'll trigger a whole bunch of the devices. So let's just pretend the name is Alex. Alex, play AM770 KTTH. Samuel L. Jackson says, again? Okay. And then he drops the MF word. I'm 99 cents is a bargain.
That'd be great.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to listen, or if you want to send me a text on the NumBetter Tax Resolution Hotline. Don't forget, you can listen on your Amazon Echo or your Google Home. Just activate it. Tell it to play KTTH. You'll be able to listen to it live right there. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really, really do appreciate it. Como has a really good piece out there right now by Matt Markovich, friend of the show, highlighting an important detail in the lawsuits against opioid manufacturers, specifically as it relates to the lawsuit filed here in the Seattle area, because it's directly tied to homelessness. And it points out that really, it reveals really, that folks like Mayor Jenny Durkin and Shama Sawant, they're lying to you when they talk about the cause of homelessness. They tell you over and over and over again that the reason why we have homelessness is because it's so expensive to live in the Seattle area.
We know that our lack of affordable housing is helping fuel our homeless crisis.
We know that, she says. It's weird because in the lawsuit against the opioid manufacturers, you say something a lot different. So you're either lying in the lawsuit, which I don't think you are, or you're lying when you stand up there and deliver your speech because you don't care about lying to the general public. You would care about lying to a judge, but you don't care about lying to me or my neighbors or my friends who live here or my listeners who live here. She doesn't care that she's lying to you because she's lying to you with the intent of pushing policies that will go after Amazon, which she loathes. Big business, which she does not care for. Developers, which she despises. Just like Shama Sawant. But there's a sentence in this lawsuit that Matt Markovich pointed out. It's really, really, really important to understand. Here's a sentence. Researchers estimate that over 50% of people with opioid addictions in Seattle are homeless. Seattle's navigation team, composed of outreach workers and police officers specially trained to interface with the homeless population, estimates that 80% of the homeless individuals they encounter in challenging encampments have substance abuse disorders. We pretend that people who are living out on the street aren't overwhelmingly dealing with substance abuse disorders. We're just pretending that they don't exist. And it's weird. It's a bizarre position for the city to take publicly, blaming it on rent increases for a number of reasons. Number one, just think about it for a second logically. And think about your own situation, those of you who are renters or those of you who still are paying off that mortgage. Let's say your rent right now is $1,500. And that's tight for you, but you can technically pay for it, right? It's not comfortable. You wish you had more money, but you don't. What happens if just overnight they decided to raise the rent to $2,000? A, you maybe take on a roommate. B, you find another apartment that you can't afford. C, you move in with a friend or a family member just to scrape by and save some money. Or D, you immediately become homeless. The city wants you to pick D. The city wants you to believe D, that you automatically become homeless. Would that happen to you? Probably not. But they want you to think that that's the vast majority of folks. And yet their own data, when they did the overnight poll, the count of people who are living out on the streets, in RVs, in parks, in alleyways, on sidewalks, when they actually spoke to them and asked them why they're homeless, only 6% said that rental costs are the reason why they're homeless. Only 2% said they faced a foreclosure, and that's why right now they're living out on the streets. A number that low makes sense to me. And it makes sense to me not just because logic dictates that, because sometimes logic isn't always logical. It's only logical to me. Maybe it's only logical to you, but maybe it's not to someone else. I live here. I see the people who are living out on the streets. I encounter them, as I did yesterday, as one was following me as I was walking home, acting out very, very weirdly, kind of freaking me out. He very clearly was dealing with one of two things: mental illness, which we also know is rampant, or number two, some kind of
substance abuse disorder, which we also know is very rampant. Why is it that I keep running into people like that if they represent such a small number? Why do you keep running into people who very clearly have substance abuse disorders or mental illness if that really only applies to a small percentage of the population? Now, it's certainly possible, and I think this is a valid point, that just because you see these people doesn't mean that they represent all of the homeless people, because there are lots of people who maybe you don't see, the ones who aren't living as openly as these folks. And I think that's a very valid point. But when you look at the data doesn't back up what the city is saying. When you talk to the experts like Dr. Leslie Enzium, who's been treating people, particularly those experiencing homelessness, for 24 years, she tells Como something completely different.
It is a very common story that I hear that patients started their opioid path really with prescription opioids, and over time it transitioned to heroin.
These are the people who are living out on the streets. And I would argue there are policies that are making that situation worse. Because number one, when you don't actually address the problem, when you pretend the problem is something that it's not, you're definitely not addressing the people who are living out on the streets. And so they're going to get even worse in their substance abuse. But number two, you've got policies like in King County, like in Snohomish County, that say, hey, you can keep up to X amount of grams of heroin, meth, any kind of drug, and we're not going to prosecute you. If you're found with less than X amount, and I say X amount because in some cases, Snohomish County, for example, it's 2 grams. In King County, I believe it's 2.5 grams. But then when you actually talk to cops, they say it's more like 9. It's way more than 2. Dan Satterberg, the King County prosecutor, he's not going to touch it, period. When you have a policy like that, well, all of a sudden, people really don't have an incentive to get off that deadly drug. They stay on it. And it's a problem that Snohomish County is trying to deal with right now because their prosecutor, Adam Cornell, he's trying to get rid of that awful policy. Which, yeah, it was inspired by King County. He told Como TV that, well, I want to get rid of this 2 gram policy. It's not been easy.
I'm trying to reverse the policy, but to do it in a way that focuses on treatment and really what I'd call compassionate justice. The focus really needs to be on treatment and harm reduction. We're ready to engage people who want to get better.
So harm reduction comment aside, I agree with what he just said. Harm reduction usually is code for heroin injection sites. I don't know if that's what he was meaning, but since that's generally what the code has been for, here, I'll just reject that part. But I believe in treatment on demand. I believe in the policy in Arlington, in Marysville, under Mayor John Nehring. A policy that works like this. Cops, along with a social worker, someone working for a nonprofit, interact with someone who's living out on the streets illegally. And they say to them, whether or not they're dealing with a substance abuse issue, they say, look, you're breaking the law. I'm going to give you two options. Option number one is I arrest you and you go to jail. Option number two is I'm going to connect you with the services that you need, whether that means mental health care, substance abuse treatment, a shelter for the night or for the week or for the month. We will get you the help that you need. Now, it's totally up to you, 100% up to you. I'd prefer that you choose option number two because I don't want to arrest you. Because I know that arresting you isn't going to help you. But I also know letting you stay here is not going to help you. And maybe you'll take the arrest this time, and maybe you'll take the arrest the second and third and fourth and fifth time. But maybe that sixth time, you'll take option number two and get the help that you need. They've seen such tremendous success there. But unfortunately, when you're a drug user, you don't necessarily see that, certainly not at the get-go.
You get busted with a baggie that you picked up off the ground, you go to prison. You know, you're going to lock somebody up for a little $20 bag?
Yes, if you're an addict. What's even worse than this, because it's not even solely about the drug user, it's about the drug dealer who understands that they're not going to get popped if they've got X amount of heroin on them. So you know what they do? They don't carry all of the drugs that they're selling illegally on them. They keep it nearby. And they only keep a certain amount. They sell it, then they re-up. That's how it works. And it's sad. And it's something that I'm glad they're addressing in Snohomish County. When you look at Snohomish County versus King County, they are so way ahead of the curve on this sort of stuff. So ahead of it. And that's why they're seeing such better results than, say, Seattle. That's not perfect in Snohomish County. You look at what's going on in Everett.
kind of feels almost like it's getting ready to get out of control, but they're doing what they can. King County seems like they're just letting it go wherever it goes. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. If you missed my interview with Dana Perino, former White House spokesperson, I think it's worth your listen. You can hear it over on our Twitter page, twitter.com/JasonRantz, or text the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you a link to the podcast where you can listen to it. Text podcast to 1-800-465-8770. Live in the Online Trading Academy studio, producer Peyton gave me a note, said that I was a little too low energy in that last segment. I thought I hit the energy level that was appropriate for the subject matter, but he was saying, no, too low. Got to perk up, man. Got to pep up.
Yeah, that's what I want to see.
Well, when I get to talk about weed, I feel like I can't be too perked up, because, but then I can't be too low energy because people are going to start to talk.
Yeah, you got to find that middle point.
I'll try.
You're a professional.
So there's good news, at least from my perspective, and it's an update to a story that we talked about yesterday. We talked about the Safe Banking Act. Essentially, what this does is when you go to a business like this, instead of only using cash, you can actually use your credit card.
Green one. We have drinks, chewables, we have sugar, our indica. You want to think of indica? Blue Dream, probably one of the most popular strains throughout. You can still get things done. You can go grocery shopping. Thank you very much for coming in and have a heart and have a great day.
There you go. Safe Banking Act passed 321-103. Right now, thanks to federal guidelines, as it views specifically marijuana, including marijuana sold in states that have legalized the recreational use of marijuana, which I believe now is 32, 33, you can't use a credit card. You can't use a bank. That also means that when you're focused just on a cash-only business, you're carrying a whole bunch of cash, which makes them ripe for being targeted by thieves who want to steal not just the product, but also the cash that they believe is on hand. And it passed in what was a near unanimous bill. Almost every single Democrat supported it. Half of the Republicans supported it. This is good news. This is good news because I don't want to put any person at risk or at a higher risk of having to deal with a thief. And the fact of the matter is, these spots, whether or not you support the legalization of marijuana, by not allowing them to work with a bank and take credit cards, you are putting people's lives at risk. You are. I know a lot of people don't support the legalization of marijuana. I get it. But you've lost that battle. You have. And you have to know that. We lose battles all the time, right? We win some, we lose some. Write that down. That was wise. I don't think anyone said that. You win some, you lose some.
That is an amazing original quote.
Isn't that good?
Yeah.
I'm going to start coming up with
that. You're like Michael Scott of quotes.
Yes. No one knows who that is. Like 12 people maybe do.
What?
Yeah, I know. You're going to lose some. You lost this one. It's okay. Why don't you help mitigate some of the negative effects of this? No one wants to have a business in their neighborhood constantly get robbed. So let's actually do something about it. Now, the bad news is right now, it doesn't appear that it's got the Senate support. Or if it did, there's no race to get this passed in the Senate. I hope that changes. Meanwhile, Senator Elizabeth Warren was put in a position that kind of made her flustered. I think we're reading a little bit more into this than we should. However, I don't like her, so let's just lean in. CBS News reporter essentially flagged this. I'm not entirely sure I know where this clip actually came from. There was someone who asked Elizabeth Warren about an ethics plan that she just unveiled. And it was asked in a way specifically tied to the Joe Biden, Hunter Biden scandal that the American public is starting to get reintroduced to. And listen to how it went.
For two ethics plans, could you say whether or not under a Warren administration, would your vice president's child be allowed to serve on a board of a foreign company?
No.
Why not?
I don't know. I mean, I'd have to go back and look at the details on the plan.
Do you think that could be a problem?
I have to go back and look.
It's funny because it sounded to me like when she initially was responding. As she was talking, she realized that it might be perceived as being about Joe Biden. Then she was like, oh, it is about Joe Biden. So she flustered a little bit. But at the same time, I suppose she could make the argument that I don't remember if that very, very, very specific issue was addressed in the plan, which I'm presuming is a bulky plan. So I give her just 10% of a pass.
Yeah, right at the start, she said no. And then she's like, well,
and then she realized what she just said no to.
I might have to go back and look at what the plan is.
I don't know why this would be deemed controversial. Now, I know that they don't want to go after Joe Biden. At least Elizabeth Warren doesn't, because Elizabeth Warren has everything to lose at this point, right? She right now is starting to overtake Joe Biden. She's overtaken him in the Quinnipiac poll that was released in the last 24 hours or so. So she's on the ascent. He's on the descent. There's no real reason to pick on him because what she's doing right now is picking up in some of the quote or some of the polls. So she doesn't want to be hit by the cable media networks, doesn't want to get hit by the New York Times as being the Democrat who was the first person to turn on Joe Biden. Let's be clear. Someone's going to turn on Joe Biden and use this Hunter Biden stuff and the Ukraine issue against him. They'll still say Trump is despicable, blah, blah, blah. But they'll also start to hit Joe Biden because he's right now perceived as weakened. And he is. He's limping right now. I don't count. I made this joke multiple times tonight. Let's not count Tulsi Gabbard because she's always going after, but it's not really picking up. So who's going to be the top tier or even second tier candidate to go there first? It's not going to be Elizabeth Warren. Bernie Sanders is not going to do it because they've already kind of passed on this. I'm guessing Kamala Harris. So far, she's kind of balked at it. I think she's going to be the one who does it. Because she's in that weird position of she's still technically a top-tier candidate, but she's all the way at the bottom of the top tier. Been listening to the Jason Rancher. Thank you so much.